Hello, you're listening to Therapy Insiders. Welcome back. Thanks for tuning in. On this upcoming episode, we cover a lot of important topics, such as coffee, no arguments there, right? Social media, business, students, and mentorship, and growth. And all of that is with my guest, Eric Robertson, who is a physical therapist based in California. Eric does a lot with fellowship training, as well as social media and physical therapy endeavors in general. Eric and I covered a lot on social media involvement, the importance of it, how to get in, how to do it properly, some potential ups and downs that can come your way, as well as business. You know, we talk a lot on this podcast about business, and I really, really wanted to get his insight on barriers to entry, because students are very interested in business because they don't get a lot of it in school. But even what they do get in school isn't necessarily realistic, real world applications of business. So we covered some of what it takes to own a business and the risks, the inherent risks that come with it, because it's not easy. So, without further ado, let's hear a word from our sponsor, WebPT, then get into Therapy Insiders. Therapy Insiders is sponsored by WebPT, the end-to-end business solution for private practice PTs, OTs, and SLPs, providing everything from documentation and scheduling to RCM services, billing software, and now, drumroll please, outcomes. WebPT's mission is to help rehab therapists achieve greatness in practice, and that starts with education. That's why WebPT hosts a free webinar every month. Join Dr. Heidi Janenga and Charlotte Bonnet on February 26th as they explain why outcome data is crucial to us as therapists to prove our value. To learn more and register, visit webpt.com/value. And wait till the middle of this episode where I ask Heidi why outcomes are so important for the profession moving forward. And now, let's get to Therapy Insiders with our guest, Eric Robertson. Cue the music. What's up, Doc? Hello, welcome back to Therapy Insiders, part of the UpDoc Media family. I'm Dr. Gene Shirakabrad. And if you follow this podcast and if you follow UpDoc Media, you know we're fairly active on social media and Twitter, Facebook, our Facebook page, things like that. And conversations are always happening. And I talk to people all the time, DPT students, when I lecture, when I do all kinds of business things. I always strongly encourage, with slight shaming, to get on social media. And some of the concerns that I hear is that it's overwhelming, it's intimidating, I don't know how to do it, things like that. And I always tell people it doesn't matter all the things around it on the periphery, those concerns. They're real, absolutely. But the negative of it is so much greater than whatever concern you might have. And you don't have to jump in the conversation. At least follow conversations. Be part of the conversations, because conversations happen whether you are there or not. So you might as well at least see what's happening. And a lot of good things happen. A lot of connections happen because of social media. A lot of business deals happen or don't happen because of social media or lack of. And another great thing happens with social media is you get to learn. You learn a lot. And it's not always about the stuff that you work, that you learn about. For example, I'm a big fan of coffee. If you've seen me on Twitter, once in a while I'll post something about coffee. And I made a somewhat recent switch a few months ago to a French press. And I wasn't that aware of French presses. I knew how to operate one, and I've tried it a few times. So I reached out on Twitter, and I had a surprising amount of people hit me back with a lot of awesome advice, including coffee advice. And one such aficionado that came back to me, who I've been following and read his tweets from the physical therapy world, is Eric Robertson, who is joining us today. Eric, man, what's going on? Thanks for joining Therapy Insiders.
Yeah, thanks for congratulations on the French press.
Thank you. Thank you. I don't know if you remember that. It was a little while ago, and I was excited, somewhat confused, because it's not you. I mean, you have to be very precise with the coffee grinds because they have to be fairly crude versus, because I was just doing mostly espresso and Americanos. So this was a different world for me.
Yeah, you know, I way back in the day, I started with French press as sort of the beginning of my coffee rabbit hole that I found myself down. And, you know, it all starts with the grind, man.
That's what I heard. And I was buying grinds. I wasn't doing it myself. And I recently started at least grinding at the store where I buy the beans. And it really is a different world. Like it's getting the coffee ground down at the store and then drinking the coffee when I got home. I mean, you could really taste the flavor difference.
Yeah, you really can. You know, when you talk to coffee people about, you know, what should your home coffee setup look like, most of them tell you to start with the grinder and then build up from there. You know, myself, I tend to want to grind coffee no more than like 3 minutes out from when I'm going to brew it or use it.
That's good advice. And aside from coffee, which people listening, I think it's kind of hard not to enjoy coffee or at least partake in it when you're dealing with the healthcare world. I know I never even drank Red Bull until I got to PT school. And I remember anatomy lab and coming out of like 7 hours of dissection, I was like, I really don't know why, but I feel like I need to drink a Red Bull right now because I was so drained. And that's when I started going down the coffee path. But even if you're not into the coffee in the coffee realm, Eric, kind of the social media stuff, you do a lot on social media, you're fairly active. What would you say the value is, especially for the DPT students listening? What is the value of jumping on social media, even though it's so intimidating or can seem so?
It's a really broad question, right? It's slightly difficult for me to answer just because I think the value is just so enormous, right? I don't know that it lies in any one aspect of anything. But I can say that, you know, you mentioned that you learn things on social media. And I have to say that by far, most of the things I learned today, be it about the world around me, news, current events, but even professional information and latest research, all comes from social media. It's really my main source of new knowledge.
Well, it's almost an answer in itself when you can't even put into words how much value is in it. And also the flip side of that is because it's so much, so many avenues and so many things you can do, that's why it can get overwhelming. So if somebody's listening, if we have to break it down, let's say the starter guide, right? We're making a starter kit of coffee, and we're making a starter kit for social media for our listeners. If they want to jump on and they're already listening to this podcast, so they have to have some kind of multimedia savvy. So the next natural progression is we're going from a drip coffee maker to something a little bit more advanced, like a French press, so to speak. We'll go with the coffee analogy to social media. So if they're jumping to that next stage, what would you recommend?
You know, it's, I guess the first thing would be to acknowledge the fact that you may be familiar with social media from, a very social perspective, right? Talking with your friends, keeping up with your family. And the first step is sort of acknowledging that there's like a different side to social media, right? There's the professional side, there's the academic side. And, you know, that can be something a little bit foreign for folks, right? Because their skill set in social media may be sharing social things, and it might not be figuring out where all the good, high value, you know, information dense stuff is. And so I think, you know, kind of acknowledging that there's that separate phase. And then the next thing would be, you know, find those real, like, you know, influencers that you can talk to and you can connect to that, you know, can serve as like launching points for networks that you ultimately build, right? And it is intimidating. It could be a lot, you know, if you're just getting into it, you know, it's somewhat of, especially Twitter is somewhat of a different language, but you know, just like anything, it takes time to build a network of friends and contacts, and social media makes that happen a lot quicker than it does in real life, but it still does take some time to kind of curate your lists and your networks. And so, you know, get in there, be patient, you know, add a couple things at a time and don't try to like just jump in and dominate.
Yeah, and it moves so quick. Like your room for error is fairly large. Even if you say something, whether it's irrelevant or something, even something stupid, it moves so fast that most people won't even recognize it. Like, yeah, maybe a couple people will pick it up and say something about it, but the next day, chances are it's forgotten. Like even the biggest names that have, you know, their Twitter fights or whatever, within a couple of days, it's like it never happened. Like you have to keep moving forward. And I think just jumping in is awesome. And Twitter, I agree with you. I think Twitter is a different language. And it's also, it's a good start because so many things are happening that you can kind of pick and choose, and you can see a lot of the conversations that are happening, and a lot of connections I think will happen through Twitter. And it's a different beast than if they're listening, if they're kind of partaking in Twitter, would you recommend that they just stay back and gauge the conversations, or actually jump in? Like, are there any negatives for jumping into a conversation?
Well, you know, there's certainly some negatives of, you know, like anything, you know, if you imagine Twitter and the landscape of Twitter as a cocktail party, you know, you don't walk into the cocktail party and just start telling everybody anything about you, whether it's relevant to the conversation or not. Right. You'd kind of be a little shunned, to be a little awkward. Maybe, you know, there wouldn't be any drinks for you at the bar. And so, you know, if you kind of consider that metaphor with the Twitter landscape, you know, you kind of want to walk in and get a sense of what people are talking about and go from there. But I would say, you know, lurking is one thing, and there's only a certain amount of value and connections that can come from that. And you don't really make the real connections until you start talking to people and interacting, and, you know, they get to know you. And, you know, I've made some really good friends that I've only met them on Twitter, and some I've known literally for years on Twitter before meeting them in person. And it's really kind of a neat way to expand your professional relationship. And, you know, I think I have to summarize, like, you know, the most profound thing social media ever did for me as a professional was it led to a series of events that allowed me to get my first faculty position. And so if there's your perspective for how powerful is social media, it's pretty powerful.
Well, let's talk about your faculty position, because we kind of jump right in and we didn't really give listeners your background, even though I'm sure most will know you, but just to give them a quick catch up, what is the faculty position, and what have you been doing in the field of physical therapy or business and such over the last few years?
Yeah, so you know, right now my position is that I work and direct the Kaiser Permanente Northern California Orthopedic Manual Physical Therapy Fellowship Program. And I've been here for a couple years. I took over when Carol Jo Tischner, who had been the director for almost 25 years, retired. And so it was sort of like a dream position to jump into and to be able to lead this prestigious ship along. And so that's the primary job that I do. And then there's a few other things that I do that keep me busy. I'm also currently an assistant professor at the University of Texas, El Paso, and lead their musculoskeletal series for the DPT program out there. And I do that kind of via a hybrid curriculum where I do some online teaching, and then I fly out there for some labs. And I think maybe my other two big roles are more service-related roles. I'm currently serve as the secretary for AAMT, for the Manual Therapy Academy. And I am a member of the media corps for APTA, so I respond to a lot of media requests that way.
Nice. So you don't do much, obviously.
No, not – yeah, I don't have a lot of time.
Slacking. Slacker. No wonder you can know so much about coffee. Yeah, now it all makes sense. But it's I know you were just recently, speaking of media stuff, you were recently at the Graham Sessions, and I was probably more than most times in my life having serious FOMO, more than anything. It usually doesn't happen because I'm usually so busy I don't even have time to process a lot of stuff that I'm not partaking in. But that was the stuff that was coming out of there. It was truly on the same, I think why it resonated so much with me, because it was exactly on the same wavelength that I've been a proponent of for so long. And that is the DPT student, fresh PT voice, and their desire to learn about business and moving this profession forward instead of jumping in and following. I think this, the millennials and this upcoming class and classes, it's so exciting because they have this push and drive to actually do something and not be part of something, but drive something. Is that kind of what you got out of Graham sessions as well?
Yeah, Gene, I couldn't agree more. It's really phenomenal to see the caliber of new physical therapists that are arriving in the workplace today. And, I have the very fortunate perspective to be able to see them as entry-level students and then track them all the way through sort of residency process and through to a fellowship process. And so I get to see that nice perspective and the change and the growth. And, the caliber of PTs that are coming into the workforce and the innate abilities they have, number one, the innate intelligence they have as a group, number two, and then the drive to do something to make physical therapy their profession and not have it be just a job is really one of the notes that resonates with me. And, for the first time ever at Graham Sessions, there was really a large voice of new professionals there to speak. And, to be honest, some of the comments that came through were from the new professionals.
And that's awesome because it's a new energy. And DPT students, I think, for the longest time, especially in school, you're kind of beat down in thinking that you don't know anything, or some of the CIs might say you really don't know anything. And that's true, experience-wise, maybe technique-wise. But DPT students and fresh grads, they have their superpower is they have this eagerness and passion and excitement that unfortunately a lot of clinicians lose because you kind of get burnt out and you get stuck in the rut and the usual grind type stuff. But when you're just coming out, when you're so excited to make a difference or earn a paycheck or whatever the motivation is, I mean that in itself can be harnessed to do so much. So and not that it's easy, it's never easy. No business or work is ever easy, because if it was, a lot of other people would be doing it. So what are some barriers to entry for new grads or people that want to get into business? Because business is a big hot topic, and we can talk about whether it should be taught or not taught. But just getting in, what are some of the difficulties that you see or hear about?
I know you're on the edge of your seat waiting to hear Eric's answer on the barriers to entry for business. But before we do, let's hear from WebPT, the end-to-end business solution for private practice PTs, OTs, and SLPs, providing everything from documentation and scheduling to RCM services, billing software, and now outcomes. WebPT provides a free monthly webinar to educate providers on being better in practice and business. In the beginning, I told you I sat down with Dr. Heidi Janenga, the co-founder and president of WebPT, to learn more. So I asked her, hey Heidi, the topic of your webinar this month is outcomes. How does this impact our profession and our care? What will people learn if they tune in? Why are outcomes so important?
Thanks so much, Gene. As healthcare reform pushes providers to deliver better care at a lower cost, the ability to prove our value as a profession is absolutely critical. That's why I'm betting on outcomes. In this month's free webinar, I'll explain what outcomes tracking is, why you should care, and most importantly, how you can start tracking and leveraging outcomes now. To join in on the conversation, register at webpt.com/value.
Thanks, Heidi. Definitely check out WebPT for that webinar. It's free. It's valuable. webpt.com/value. And now, let's get back to Therapy Insiders and Eric Robertson's answer about the barriers to business entry.
One of the things that really concerns me is the debt load that new students are carrying into the workplace. And it's really a challenge for the profession. I spoke to somebody a couple days ago who's considering selling their practice, and they're looking for somebody who is out of PT school 3 or 4 years. And they wanted that person, to be young and eager, and it all sounded good. And then, the next thing was like, and this person needs to be able to clear like, 100K in cash without blinking an eye. And, that didn't necessarily compute with what my perspective is of new graduates for physical therapists, right? So
yeah, absolutely.
The other side of that is, a couple of weeks ago, I talked to a new professional, and she, relayed to me that she took the job she was in for the salary because she had $160,000 of student loan debt. And that can really, inhibit your progress or your risk when you're trying to decide like what business venture to go into.
And especially when you don't have a good business sense, and even clinicians that are quote unquote successful that start a practice,
they're clinicians that start a practice, that start a business. They're not business people that start a practice, which is a big, big difference. And it's mindset and it's training and it's the stuff that you have to learn, because that's probably the most common question I get is about business, probably because that's kind of our focus as a company. But business is tough, especially if you don't go through it and you don't know what to expect and the structure and the marketing and how to really grow a business. That's not easy. And when, like you said, when you're kind of held down by misconceptions and perceptions about different things, and then add in the debt, you kind of get into a scarcity mindset instead of a growth mindset, which is that's it's very hard to get beyond that, because you're always thinking about just the next step versus a big picture. So how do we teach a growth mindset? Is it something that we instill in the DBT program, or is it just kind of focusing on a select few that really have the capacity for that?
No, I think it's teaching in the DBT programs. You know, I think it's, letting people know, not even letting them know, but letting them be aware of the options that they have in front of them. You know, one of the interesting notes that was coming from the new professionals at Graham Sessions was, you know, yeah, we all want to be in business, but no, don't tell us what kind of business we want to be in, because maybe we don't want to open this brick and mortar standalone clinic that maybe you did in the 80s and made a bunch of money from. You know, maybe that doesn't work as well today. You know, can it work? Probably in certain markets, right? But are there better ways to do it? But, you know, maybe I want to make a virtual practice and have it be, you know, patient-centered medical home and do something that way. And so there's a lot of innovation that's around. And, you know, I think physical therapy as a profession, healthcare as an industry, really has the opportunity for people to get in there and do some disrupting and try to come up with new models to have businesses. And so when you think about those, the flexibility and the model and the different options that are open to people, you know, that's where you find the solution to that paralysis of, oh my God, you know, funds are scarce, I can't go forward, I can't take risks. Find a way forward for yourself, and there's literally endless options.
Which kind of loops us back to social media in the first place, because if you really want to kind of anticipate the new model and anticipate what will be, which is innovation, it's anticipation of where the trends are going instead of optimizations of previous successes. You want something that will be, not what was. And you have to kind of be on the lifeline of what's going on, and that's social media, because it's always, something's always happening, things are always moving, information's always put out. And I completely agree with you. I think learning the foundations of business and learning how to think like a business doesn't necessarily put you in a traditional business. It makes you flexible, it makes you agile, you can move there, you know, you can create a lot of different things, and you're willing to take risks because you know that you have a solid foundation behind you versus just kind of assuming or kind of following what somebody else has done already. So if you want to encourage students, and this is a controversial topic. I know that. And my comment is always that we don't tell somebody whether you should or shouldn't get into business. We provide the information to help you make the best decision possible. So for everyone that's listening that is interested in business, you've kind of seen it, you've been around it. What would you say some of the benefits of business, some of the negative of business, especially coming right out of school?
Well, you know, it's an interesting question. And, you know, I've been kind of on all sides of this. You know, I've been in business ventures that have been successful. I've been in, you know, business ventures that have been very unsuccessful. You know, I started a clinic at one point that, you know, took off out of the gates, you know, like a racehorse, and, you know, I didn't make it through, you know, the back stretch. And so the clinic failed, and that was uncomfortable, right? And put me in a little bit of a financial hole for a bit. And so, you know, you have to acknowledge that there's a reality there and make decisions carefully about where you move forward and how you move forward. And I think, you know, reflecting on that, there were some definite things about the market that I knew I was aware of, but I tried to talk myself out of a little bit. And so, you know, I paid the price for that. And so there's some downsides, but you know, one of the things you see when you look at, you know, people who are succeeding in business is that component of grit, right? They just kind of keep going. And so, you know, there was a downturn, but, you know, okay, what's next for me? And you push on and you keep going. I think some of the benefits are that, you know, you get this satisfaction from from your career and from the knowledge that you hold in your head that is physical therapy, you know, you go into physical therapy school, it's hard to get in. You have to be really smart. You have to be really smart to get through it. It's very, very cognitive and academic. And then sometimes when you get out into the workforce and, you know, you're a staff PT, quote, you know, at the clinic, it can get a little bit boring seeing one patient after another throughout the day. And I think, you know, having the sense to get into different avenues, different components of what is physical therapy really leverages that stuff that's in your head a lot more. And I know for me, I try to think of, you know, what do I want my practice to be versus what do I want my job to be? And that's sort of the way that I look at it. And that's the thing that powers me and gives me fuel and keeps me going.
And that comes down to self-awareness. Like, you have to have very strong self-awareness to know that you're having fun, you're enjoying what you're doing, or you're going through the motions. And a lot of us will lie to ourselves because we have 120,000 in debt, because we went to school for 7 years, because, well, what'd somebody else say if I did this? And that's all tough unless you have, you're grounded within yourself, or you have a strong support system, kind of, because that was me. You know, I went to school, I practiced for several years, and then I started several business ventures, and I stopped practicing, even though at this point I miss it and just kind of do it for fun, because I enjoy it. Like, I can do it because I enjoy it, not because I have to really make a ton of money off of it. I get to kind of try out different business models and see what works and try different marketing campaigns and things like that because it's fun and I really enjoy that. But if you can't allow yourself to really do what you enjoy, whether that's pivoting and moving away from daily practice and starting a business and running a business, that can be really tough, and that leads to burnout, right?
Yeah, you know, it's that's always a thing. You know, there's new professionals, they get in there in the clinic in their first couple of years, you kind of see everybody go through it. You know, they get to that, like, yay, I'm done with PT school, they throw a party, and then, you know, a year into it, they're really like going through this phase where they're struggling a bit because they're into the grind of seeing patients every day. And, you know, it's you know, some people seem to be more Teflon than others about that, and it kind of can let that kind of roll off of them. But, you know, me personally, I felt right away, you know, I didn't like being tied down to a schedule, particularly, you know, in the sense that all day long, you know, one patient after the other, after the other, after the other, kind of get into the kind of almost like a mill type thing. Even if you're providing good care, it's a grind to see patients all day long, and it takes a lot of energy. And, you know, I think what you said was a good point about self-awareness, right? You have to figure out what makes you tick and solve the equation that matters for you. And I tell people that too a lot when they're looking at different residency or fellowship programs, and, you know, they come to me and they say, oh, you know, Eric, should I go to your fellowship program? And I say, well, I don't know what you should do. You know, you have a bunch of variables, and I'll help you fill in the information, but only you can solve that equation for what matters to you moving forward, because you're the only person that has the perspective that you have.
That's so right on, and that's solid mentorship. And mentorship is crucial. It's always been, but even more now, and it needs to be defined. Like, I don't know if you know Jeff Moore on Twitter. Jeff Moore and I do a virtual mentorship group. We call it a PT Masterminds for DPT and fresh grads, and it's all digital. You know, we charge them like $29 a month, and we do bi-monthly like presentations. He does the clinical stuff, I do the business stuff, and we support them. Like, we give them information, but we don't make decisions for them. I mean, that's so important. Like, you can't make a decision for somebody, because that takes that choice, that difficulty away from them, and you can't do that, because it's going to come back when you're not there, and they'll have to suffer because of that. And I so agree with you that you can't just tell somebody, yeah, do this or don't do that. You just say, if you do this, if you do that, these are your options. At the end of the day, you have to decide.
Yeah, you really, and that's always a good red flag when you're, like, you know, feeling out somebody with mentorship, or even if you're getting used to social media and following people and, you know, trying to see if they're a good mentor for you or not, you know, that you should buy it. That's a, unless it's, you should think about it. Other than that, it's pretty much a red flag for me.
Oh, I completely agree with you. This is what I've done, and this is how it resulted for me. And if somebody's always just blowing positive shit at you, you got to run away, because
And if anybody tells you that anything is easy, especially in the world of healthcare and business, they are just absolutely lying to you to sell you something. It is not easy by any stretch of the imagination. Business is a grind, like you said, and you can tell somebody how the grind happens. You can even lay out your entire plan for them, but to actually live through it is a whole different story.
Yeah, you know, everything takes hard work. Anything that's worth having is worth working for. And you know, definitely experienced that throughout my career. And you know, it's the one thing I've always been proud of is not being afraid of doing the work that you need to get it done. And I think, like anybody who's gotten anywhere in business in any sense, you know, there's those times where you're up late, everybody's asleep, or you're up early before everybody's awake, and you're really just cranking and pushing to get things done. And you know, it's the reality of the world sometimes. And I think it's important to remember that, you know, while there's a lot of opportunities out there, you know, each one of them is going to require its own set of challenges and work along with it.
Yeah, it's kind of like you become the overnight success after working for 10 years at 80 to 100 hours a week, and then 10 years later you're an overnight success, and everyone's like, whoa, this guy just came out of nowhere. And it's like, not quite.
Yeah, well, I was so happy when Malcolm Gladwell wrote that book about Bill Gates and the 10,000 hour rule, because I really felt bad about myself until I realized how much Bill Gates had practiced before he was able to drop out of Harvard and you know, go make his Microsoft.
Yeah, it's something you have to live. Like, I think if you're interested in business, and there's a big difference. Not everyone is an entrepreneur, and not everyone should be an entrepreneur. And being an entrepreneur is not being in business. They're two different things. Like running a lifestyle business, you can be a very successful businessman and it'll be tough, and you can work some hours. But being an entrepreneur is a whole different ball game of scaling a company and growing an idea. So that's a different kind of grind. Not to say one is better than the other, just I think some people are one or the other. Like you fit into a category, and it's a very small percentage of people that are entrepreneurs, true entrepreneurs, where you just kind of go all in and no lifeboat, so to speak. But the hours, the grind, all that stuff kind of wears down on you, and you figure out whether it's something that you really enjoy. Like I can put in the hours, but most of those hours I will enjoy. I will look back, and the sacrifices that you make, you won't regret them so much, right? I mean, you've done it and you're like, I've really accomplished something that I really wanted to.
Yeah, you know, it is rewarding, you know, but it's also important to remember too that there's, you know, a lot of ways people can be kind of quote in business without necessarily being that, you know, kind of all in entrepreneur, you know, you're hanging out in Silicon Valley with a startup kind of thing. You know, if you look at me and you look at my positions right now, you know, some of my stuff that I do, I'm an independent contractor for some of the things that I do. I'm, you know, an employee of an organization, and some of the things I do are just sort of my own thing. And so what I've done is, you know, kind of take the boundaries that are implied with the sort of normal expectations, like, oh, here's your job, this is what you do, that's all you do. I found ways to find, you know, symbiotic relationships between different things that I do. And I added texture to my collection of things that I collectively see as my practice. And so, you know, there's parts where I teach, there's parts where, you know, I help Kaiser with outcomes assessment region-wide, and there's parts where I do writing and I sell products. And so, you know, that texture is the thing that's very satisfying to me. I'm somebody who likes multiple streams no matter what, and so that, you know, variation and variability of what I'm doing works out for me better than I think even if that clinic I had was going to be successful, I still wouldn't have been happy long-term in it.
I completely agree with you. I don't think picking one or the other, like you can't say, oh, I'm a businessman, so that entrepreneur is better than me, you know, or vice versa. I'm an entrepreneur, so that business is more successful than me because they have stability. Like it's not a competition. One is not, doesn't rank higher than the other. It's just you do what, like you said, you do what you're happy in, and you kind of have to understand and realize what you're trying to accomplish and what you're trying to do. And you can't judge any one of them, just like you can't judge somebody that goes through PT school and just says, listen, I just want to get a job. I just want to be a clinician. I want to treat people. And I really don't want to know anything about business, whether you agree with that or not. I think it's a bit misguided because you're still working in a business and you should know something about it. But you can't judge that person. You can't say, oh, you're wrong. You know, you can't business shame them, so to speak.
Business shaming. You know, I was, one of the things I was thinking about at Graham Sessions really relates to this point. And, you know, people were talking about different business models, and you know, the vision kept coming back up, the APTA vision about transforming society. And this person had this clinic, and this person had this, and the identity, and they wanted to transform. And the whole time I kept thinking about it, you know, I work for Kaiser Permanente in Northern California. And, you know, we have about 4 million members, and rehab services, of course, doesn't see 4 million members. But what we do see is about 430,000 PT referrals every year. That's enormous, right? If you're thinking about how do you get PT to the most amount of people? Well, one of the ways to do it is Kaiser, right? And so, you know, Kaiser's a business, and you succeed in a system like Kaiser. You work your way up through the ranks by understanding the, you know, business and the construct of the, where you are. And so, you know, if transforming society is the mission, man, it doesn't matter if you're, you know, doing your own clinic or you're innovating, you know, doing something, you have a podcast, or if you're working for a health system like Kaiser, you know, it matters that, that what you're doing resonates with you. You feel like you have a purpose, because when you have that purpose, that's when the best of you comes out, and the value of you gets transferred to society.
Yeah, that's so well said, and I completely agree with that. It's you have to do you, kind of is the saying. You know, you have to do what makes you happy, what drives you, what you enjoy doing, without necessarily looking over your shoulder and thinking, well, I wonder what that other person is thinking of me. And you do your own little piece, whether it's in the community or on a bigger scale, and it depends all on you. And you mentioned kind of innovation, and you threw out Silicon Valley there, and obviously Silicon Valley is analogous with tech. And we actually had a question on Twitter from Mark Siolak, and he asked, what do you see the vision of tech in physical therapy?
Great question, Mark. You know, it's a technology, definitely a spot. You know, I talked about it for years and years, and that was kind of one of my niches when I first started out, was really talking about technology and physical therapy. And at first I started talking about it in education and learning, and you know, since I've moved throughout my career and gotten into different phases, I'm starting to see the other side of it, you know, the patient care delivery side. And you know, it's really one of the things that Kaiser Permanente does phenomenally well at, is incorporating technology. You know, they're a great big health system, they have a ton of resources. And so there's things that happen inside of Kaiser that really, I think, are models for how standalone practices and smaller clinics and smaller hospital systems can try to model their services. You know, we have video visits as a standard of care for inside of rehab services at Kaiser. And, you know, we see quite a number of people. I think actually, you know, I don't remember the specific number, but I do recall that Kaiser in Northern California specifically is one of the leaders in the nation for conducting virtual care and video visits. But then, you know, it's about communication and networks talking to each other. And I remember, you know, for a while I worked inside of the Army. And that was my first experience working where there was, you know, this integrated electronic medical record, and you know, I could see what the primary care docs did and said and advice and where the person had been, and I got so used to that sort of high level communication. And then I left there, and you know, went and started doing some smaller outpatient private practice stuff, and I felt literally blind with my patients. I had no idea what their health status was. I couldn't see their images or the radiologist reports very easily. It was killing me inside, and I had gotten so spoiled. And you know, back at Kaiser now, it's happy again, right? Because there's the electronic health record, you can see everything. So I think, you know, those are two things that aren't really far off, but we're really, as a profession, not doing a real good job at, you know, video visits and then just being able to have improved communications throughout different care networks.
And the market is huge. I mean, we have so much potential to grow into this field. I mean, we're barely growing into kind of the tech of old, and like you said, the EMRs and, you know, web PT obviously is leading the way. Shout out to our sponsors. But it's, there's so much room for growth, and I think that's exciting. I'm with you. I completely agree. I'm huge into tech. I'm actually working on a tech startup now where we're getting everything ready to go through seed funding and pitches and all that stuff. So, and physical therapy is going to be the first
first market essentially that we're going to go through to see how it works out. So I'm really excited and I love it. And I think there's so much room for growth that I think that, again, the next generation is more amiable to it than some older generations. And I might be stereotyping and biased, and I get that, but I'm just kind of going off from what I've seen and my recent experience.
You know, one of the ways I think about technology in physical therapy is kind of this delineation of the type of care we provide. And I think for years and years and years, physical therapy has kind of been defined at one point on a spectrum of what we could potentially provide, right? So we've always provided the, you know, it takes forever, you come to us, we give you hands-on treatment for a long period of time. And to me, that's sort of like the top end of the contact that you could have with a physical therapist. And you know, that really high end in-person rehabilitative care, you know, that's always the foundation. It's always the hallmark of what we're going to be. But, you know, that's not really what defines me as a physical therapist. And I think what defines me as a physical therapist is how I solve problems, how I look at you in a healthcare system and the ways that I feel like I can help you. And so, when you think about it that way, you start to see that, well, maybe there is a spectrum of things I can do. Maybe there's one side of that spectrum is more consultative care, and the other side of that spectrum is more rehabilitative care, where I see you on an ongoing basis. And so I think on that, especially on that consultative side, is a really, you know, a great wide open market for innovation and technology. You know, and then there's still technology options on the other side too. You know, there's virtual reality treatments and who knows where you go. But I definitely think that consultative spectrum of physical therapies is really untapped.
Absolutely. I mean, the connection that you make with the person in front of you, that's unique. The stuff that you say, the things that, the way you interact, they can be coming in with back pain, the same way somebody with back pain can come in California and Maryland. But the connection that you make with that person is unique to you and that person. And I think that connection is what makes sometimes a good clinician from a great clinician, and how they talk and how they sell and how they understand the psychology of communicating. And that's huge. I completely agree with you that it's so unique to us, because we're one of few medical professions that we see people several times and have to really get to know them. It's not like a dentist that sees them once a year, maybe. You know, we see people 1 to 3 times a week, whatever your philosophy on treatment is, whether you agree with 2 to 3 times a week or not, chances are you're going to be seeing somebody a few times. And you have to be on top of your game to really know how to build that relationship super quick.
Yeah, it all starts with communication, doesn't it?
So how about we end with communication almost like we started? We started out with coffee. How about we go out with some coffee as well? How about you throw out some of your recommendations for beans that our listeners can look into, and that'll be our hashtag Project PT for this episode. Some highly recommended coffee beans or grinds.
Oh, I love it. I love it. And, you know, I saw early on Sandy Hilton asked a question on Twitter. She said, what constitutes good coffee? And I will say, for anybody who's trying to figure out the world of coffee, you know, there's coffee and then there's specialty coffee. And there's actually a distinction in the industry, right? There's a Specialty Coffee Association of America, and that's very analogous to the APTA, and I'm a member of it, and I go to the conferences, and I nerd out at their conferences, just like I nerd out at the APTA conferences. And specialty coffee is that coffee that really, like, people take good care of, right? They pick it when it's ripe. The farmer knows what he's doing. He treats it right. It's grown in the right region. The buyer knows where to find it. They test it when it comes. And you know, there's probably like 16 steps in that process of what makes good coffee. And thankfully, as a consumer, all you really kind of have to know is, you know, if I'm buying coffee, does it say when it was roasted? Does it say where it came from? Can you talk to the people selling you the coffee about, you know, why they chose that coffee? Why did they buy that? Why are they want to give that coffee to you? Do they have tasting notes related to the coffee? And, you know, most of all, is it fresh? Because as soon as you roast the beans, they start to stale out. And so, you know, it really should be less than a month old. And that would be what constitutes good coffee, coffee that was taken care of. And I guess if I had to recommend some beans, I would recommend, you maybe explore counterculture coffee. And I recently started doing some work with counterculture coffee, and it's, I think, counter_culture on Twitter, or counterculturecoffee.com. And they have, you know, they meet the bill for specialty coffee for sure. And they have some phenomenal coffees to taste. And I would say that would be one of the companies I would recommend you go check out.
And also, they're very social on social media, because I remember we were actually talking about that when I posted the French press question, and either you or Andrew Rothschild, I think, spoke of them, and they sent me an email, they tweeted at me. I mean, they were very proactive at recommending coffees and stuff like that, so that was really cool. Now that you reminded me, I should go order some coffee from them.
Yeah, they have nice online stuff. You order it, they ship really fresh, and you know, coffee is an amazing rabbit hole. It's not unlike physical therapy, you know, because you can just start, you know, learning science and the art of coffee, you know, as much as you want. The very first coffee conference I ever went to, I really wasn't knowing what to expect, and I thought maybe I was like fooling myself that I was going to get anything out of it. I sat in this room, and the speaker started putting up, you know, fMRI slides, and they were talking about the experience of taste and how context influences taste, and how what you smell and what your memory is and what color the mug is all influences how you enjoy that cup of coffee. And I thought for an instance I was sitting in a pain science lecture, but really it's about coffee. So
EBC, evidence-based coffee, I love it.
Totally.
God, I've been going to wrong conferences all these years. Do you get like some incredible samples from those conferences?
It's free coffee all day long.
Oh,
and it's
my
like
God.
The world's best baristas pouring it for you. I would recommend going.
Jesus, I'm not going to PPS next year. I'm going to a coffee conference.
Well, what they really need to do is team them up. Then we'll be talking.
Now that's innovation there, my friend. Now you're onto something. I will be going to that for sure. Awesome, man. So thanks so much for joining us. Where can listeners find you? I know you got some cool stuff going on as well with some of the blog things. So if they want to find you, where can they go?
Yeah, you know, I have a few different channels that you can find me on. You know, number one is just my own personal Twitter, which is Eric Robertson. I also have PT Think Tank, and that's kind of the blog I started a long time ago, and it's got a good number of followers. So PT Think Tank, and then my fellowship on Twitter is KP NorCal PT, or you can go to kp.org/graduateptEducation if you want to learn about our fellowship or our freshly developing orthopedic residency that we're going to launch this September that we're really excited about.
Awesome, man. Definitely we'll put all that stuff on our webpage as well at updocmedia.com on the Therapy Insiders podcast page. So Eric, again, thanks for joining us, man. It was awesome chatting with you.
Yeah, Gene, thanks for having me on. It's great to participate in the conversation. You're doing good work. Keep it going.
Appreciate it, man. Hope you enjoyed that episode with guest Eric Robertson, talking business, social media, student involvement, mentorship, and of course, coffee. Can't forget the coffee. So Eric presented a lot of good points, insights, perspectives about barriers to business, engaging in social media, going to coffee conferences, which I have no idea how I've missed all this time. They sound incredible, and I would rather take coffee samples from high-end coffee makers than pens and t-shirts from physical therapy conferences. Are you listening, physical therapy vendors? Step up your game. As always, thank you for listening. Check us out at updocmedia.com as well as Therapy Insiders on iTunes. We've had some questions about where you can listen to episodes aside from iTunes if you have an Android for whatever reason. You can always listen on Stitcher and as well as SoundCloud. So all you have to do is type in Therapy Insiders and you will find us there. And if you have any questions, comments, concerns, you could always reach us at UpDocMedia on Twitter as well as at Therapy Insiders for me, at TheOMPT for Urson, and at JoeDPT for Joe. If you need to email me, gene@updocmedia.com. So if you have any business concerns or questions, definitely check us out, updocmedia.com. And we always want to hear what you think of our podcast. So emails and social media engagement is huge. Thanks for listening.